Moving along to agenda item number 11 is the City of Santa Maria Regional Class 3 Landfill item. Mr. Briggs?
Thank you very much. Dean Thomas of our staff will be giving the presentation on this item. And while he's getting the presentation up on the screen, I'll just remind you, as I said at the outset of the meeting, but in case somebody came in a little bit late, that we do have a supplemental sheet that says prepared on, at the top, says prepared on October 10th, which has substitution language for the staff report, page 2, second paragraph, for clarification. And also on the second page of that, responds to comments from Toru Miyoshi that we received subsequently. So his comments and our responses are included there. We also have the question and answer document that I referred to at the start of the meeting, which is those are questions from the board and then our staff responses to those on this item. And let's see, I think that was it as far as our supplemental material. So with that as a reminder, I'll turn it over to Dean Thomas of our staff.
Good morning, Chairman Young, members of the board. Stated, I'm Dean Thomas, engineering geologist with the landfill unit. I'm here to present to you today important aspects of the proposed WDR order revision for the Santa Maria landfill, particularly in relation to comments received from concerned citizens on the draft order and staff report. Just to provide you some orientation, the Santa Maria landfill is located approximately 3 miles east of downtown Santa Maria, directly adjacent to the Santa Maria River here. It flows northwest towards the Pacific Ocean. You can see here in the satellite image, the surrounding land use is primarily agricultural. There's a dairy farm here and a sliver of residential land use next to the inactive area of the landfill. Just to provide you an overview of what I'll be discussing here today and some of the major points in the revised order, as outlined in the staff report and the supplemental sheet. From a standpoint of water quality, there have been no significant operational changes since the current order adoption. It's been recently brought to our attention, however, that there may be a 100-year flood protection issue at the landfill. We reviewed three of the important ongoing operations at the landfill and updated findings. These include the incremental cover or rolling closure over the unlined closed active area, the non-hazardous hydrocarbon impacted soils program, which is part of the rolling closure, and we reviewed the progress of the groundwater corrective action. Items in bolded orange here were particular issues brought up by concerned citizens. What's up here? The landfill is subdivided into three areas. The inactive area, which was a burn dump, operated from the 50s until it was closed in the 60s. The blue area to the south is the active area where ongoing municipal solid waste operations occur over a double-lined system, bottom liner system, which meets or exceeds all landfill regulations. And the area of focus in this revision is the closed active area of the landfill in green. And note the dashed lined running alongside the east side of the landfill, that the river levee. On the last order, 01041, there are the existing order. This was described as the levee providing a 500-year protection. The Corps of Engineers certified that. Approximately 6 months ago, that was downgraded to providing less than 100-year flood protection. So landfill regulations require that the landfill be protected from 100-year flood event. So we've included a provision in the order that the city must address this issue and propose engineering solutions if necessary. This is a view of the closed active area. Closed active area, it's closed with respect to municipal solid waste operations, which were transferred to the south in the active area in 2002. But it's active with respect to rolling closure. This landfill was a landfill by trench and fill method from the late 60s to 2002 when the existing order forced closure of municipal solid waste operations in response to a corrective action plan that identified this is an unlined landfill area. It does not have leachate collection systems. It was in operation before regulations requiring such engineering controls. The area is approximately 118 acres in size. And this map shows the status 2007 of in-place cover. In yellow, have achieved final grades and the composite cover has been installed using standard municipal solid waste operations. In blue is where the final grades have been achieved using NHIS as an engineered foundation layer. The hash marks are just indication of where a GeoNet component is used for drainage, the steeper sections of the cover. The dashed or the dotted line here shows the southernmost extent of NHIS materials placed to date. The city is currently providing the final cover over the soils and should be complete in mid-November next month. The bold dashed line here represents the southern extent of a bottom liner, plastic liner system that's been installed. It's a flexible membrane liner between the municipal solid waste surface and the NHIS foundation layer material. This is a conceptual cross-section through the closed active area, and it shows elements of the corrective action and the closure. The Santa Maria River to the east on the right here, running to the west, the section to east to west. Critical elements, you've got upgraded and downgraded monitoring of the groundwater. The refuse in this area, is, you can see the dashed line, it's unlined. Gas extraction wells are critical for the ground, have been identified as critical for the groundwater corrective action because the methane under pressure usually carries volatile organic carbon compounds, and those tend to dissociate in the groundwater. As I mentioned before, the NHIS plastic bottom liner system, the NHIS is a foundation layer to create the proper slopes to diverge precipitation off and away from the landfill, ultimately drying up the refuse so that it's non-reactive, doesn't create leachate or landfill gas. These colored lines here show the groundwater elevations during over three periods. Back in 1998 was the last relative high groundwater elevations. So the groundwater elevations fluctuate quite a bit at this site, upwards of 70 feet. Today it's represented by the green line here, about 20 feet below the refuse. In response to concerned citizens over the NHIS program and the possibility that hazardous wastes were being brought to the landfill and disposed as part of the program, we reevaluated the program. Basically, the intent of the program is really protective of groundwater or water resources in two ways. It's intended to remove hydrocarbon impacted soils from the environment and the surrounding region and dispose of them in a managed area of the landfill where we've got the cover the final composite cover system, monitoring systems, and management, long-term management in place. We reviewed the NHS management plan and the acceptance criteria therein, and also generator profiles submitted as part of this program for the soils that have been received by the landfill. And we basically found that the program remains protective of groundwater quality, but we found some areas in the management plan, specifically the determination of how the soils, either in the excavation and or stockpiles, are to be sampled and to represent the soils for the profile. And this was also reflected. Some of the generator profiles, there wasn't a clear maps showing sample locations and the like. However, the analytical results we reviewed appeared that they remain below acceptance criteria, the analytical acceptance criteria. So, in response, we added provisions to the revised WDR requiring the city to resubmit the NHIS management plan to clarify, provide a little clarification on the expected sampling procedures, spatial procedures, spatial sampling procedures, and to also provide a little clarification in the construction quality assurance plan at the end of the year, provide a table showing a summary of the quality assurance, quality control for that year. This is slide change here. This is a slide showing the typical response histogram of tetrachloroethylene, which is surrogate for the VOCs, volatile organic carbon compounds detected in the groundwater. Well 18D, which is an off-site well downgrading the closed active area. And you can see a good reductions in concentrations back in 19, it goes from 1996 to 2007. Back in 1996, it was primarily below MCLs, maximum contaminant levels for drinking water standard. And so we're reaching asymptotic levels of roughly 0.5, or near the practical quantitation limits, at about a tenth of the maximum contaminant levels. So the volatile organic carbon compounds are, the cleanup is progressing quite nicely. We looked at inorganics, in particular manganese, and found that those are declining also. However, not as rapidly as the volatile organic carbon compounds. And also, there have been some pulses of increased concentrations, almost like a tracer test, and declines. So we built a provision that the city should evaluate the source of these inorganics and evaluate the fate and transport. In conclusion, the revised order is a provision for addressing 100-year flood protection issue, provisions for improving consistency and transparency of the NHS program. Corrective action for the groundwater is working. However, the inorganics need further evaluation. And finally, staff recommends adopting WDR R3 2007-045 as drafted. Thank you.
Dr. Press.
Do we have any speaker cards before we start? Okay. Mr. Hageman. Okay. Go ahead, Dr. Press.
All right. Could you put up the slide again that had the cutaway with the river to the right? I guess it's that one, yeah. Okay. I guess I would be concerned, too, if I had hydrocarbon-laden soils being landfilled right next to a river with a levee that may or not may have been considered more protective than it is today. First of all, I have a couple kind of general comments and questions. Are the hydrocarbons in the soils not RCRA-listed wastes? Why not?
No, they're not.
I mean, can you speculate a little bit about how hydrocarbons that would normally be RCRA-listed wastes are not in soils? Is it because of the concentration? I mean, how does that work?
I don't believe hydrocarbons are RCRA waste.
Ever?
Lori can help on that issue. I'm not a
specialist in RCRA. Yeah, they can be RCRA-listed waste. I don't know why they're not in this case.
Yeah, I thought they could be too. Because the terminology is non-hazardous hydrocarbon impacted soils, and I'm getting a sense that the hazardous part there is perhaps a legal term, but these are constituents that in other legal settings or at different concentrations could be considered hazardous. Go ahead.
I can help.
Could you state your name first?
Yes, my name is Diane Kukul, and I'm the project manager for the Guadalupe oil field cleanup. And we've evaluated this issue of...
Is that mic on?
Yeah.
We've evaluated the issue of hazardous versus non-hazardous in terms of the soil from Guadalupe quite a bit. In terms of this landfill in particular, the non-hazardous impacted soil, it's definitely something that's paid attention to. I can speak for the Guadalupe material. It's not considered hazardous for a couple of reasons. The material that has caused the contamination at that particular site is a diluent that was added to the wells to decrease the viscosity of the oil as it was being pumped. And the free product itself, that diluent, that would be considered hazardous waste. But the fact that this material was used in the oil field production and the way that it had caused the contamination, meaning spills and leaks, that is an exemption from the classification of the federal definition of hazardous waste. And then in terms of the California definition of hazardous waste, which is actually something that is regulated by the Department of Toxic Substance Control, in the profiling that Chevron did to see if this material was acceptable to meet the acceptance criteria, they did a whole suite of analyses that addressed that Title 22 DTSC's regulations to determine if it is hazardous waste. And all of the tests that were conducted indicated it was not. So other generators also would be doing those same sorts of tests.
Okay, and they determined that it's not because it's not listed constituents or not in quantities or concentrations that are threshold or both?
Both.
So just so I'm absolutely crystal clear, there's a diluent that would normally be listed hazardous waste.
In its free product,
and then it becomes part of contaminated soil, and presumably is bound up in that soil. But what has happened to it that makes it not listed? Is it because it is dilute or bound in some way? I mean, if I were a resident, these are the questions that I would be concerned about.
The two reasons are it's not listed anywhere in the federal regulations.
I understand the legal thing, but let's set aside the legal thing. Physically,
right.
What's happening to it?
It had to be tested for toxicity, corrosivity, flammability.
The usual RCRA categories,
right.
And it didn't meet those.
There was a fourth one that I can't think of.
Ignitability.
Ignitability.
Corrosivity.
Toxicity.
And reactivity.
Yeah. Yes. And so all the tests that were conducted in the profiling exercise prior to seeing if it would meet the acceptance criteria it addressed all of those categories. So essentially what happened is that the concentrations were not great enough to trigger any of those four criteria.
And you have I imagine, some kind of concentration curves for the average wastes that are being sent. I mean, there must be some variation in the concentration of those soils, right?
There is a variation, yes. And in terms of analyzing what was representative of the entire property, they looked at over 1,000, almost 2,000 points of data for different analyses associated with TPH analysis, total hydrocarbon analysis, as well as many other types of analyses to make a determination of that range.
Uh-huh. Okay, because I know there was some question about the sampling. Just another question, if we could see that slide again. The one, the cutaway slide. Yeah. So you've got this NHIS sitting on top of that liner, and then you have those little yellow triangles there by the levee on the right. And I guess my concern is I don't know what the scale is, but that's not very far from the river. There's no distance scale there, but most people tell me that liners eventually fail, landfills leak. So what's going to prevent this the toe of that NHIS material from basically moving to the right there or to the east, either over the levee or degrading the landfill liner and getting into the river? I mean, how can we be reasonably, very confident, more than reasonably confident, that this kind of material is not going to be moving just a few yards over through the soil or over the levee? I mean,
the landfill has provisions, and its landfill regulations require funding for 30-year post-closure monitoring or and beyond if there's still a threat. So in addition, that levee needs to be maintained and through time to protect the Santa Maria Basin, but primarily the landfill will be required to maintain a fund and for maintenance.
Well,
and the cover systems are designed to be protective. And what was your question?
Well, you've got a monitoring well there by the levee, right?
Yes.
Okay, so can you sample at different depths there, or is it just going to be the first aquifer? Because you could potentially be having movement of leachate higher than the groundwater, but could eventually get close to the riverbed. So I mean, sometimes you've got sometimes there's movement. We were worried about that in Cambria.
The this river is a losing stream. The hydrographs show that through time. So it's always pushing towards the gradient is always towards towards the valley, Santa Maria.
Which is in which direction, south or north?
North.
Pushing away from the landfill?
Yeah,
towards the west, south and west.
West and south.
Call your attention right here to this, to the green line right here. That's actually the groundwater gradient is away from the river. The river is right here, and the groundwater gradient is pushing that way, away from the river. The river is recharging groundwater. So contaminants into groundwater are potentially being pushed this in this direction over here. One thing I want to call your attention to also is there's a lot of exaggeration, vertical exaggeration in this figure. Those slopes are nowhere near that angle. If you look at the, just for perception, you look at the horizontal scale to vertical scale, and I'm not sure what the exaggeration here is, but it's at least 10 times. And so these slopes, although they look dramatic in this figure, are nowhere near that level.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, we tried to squish that vertical down to be more representative of infield, but.
So why is the Army Corps involved in certifying the levees? Is it because it's a landfill on a navigable waterway or what? What's, how do they get involved?
I think the city would probably be best able to answer that question.
Okay.
This is Brad Hageman of the city.
Sure. Good morning, Mr. Hageman. Nice to see you again.
Chairman Young, members of the board, nice to see you again. Brad Hageman, City of Santa Maria. The Corps, as Dean mentioned, chose not to certify the levee. There's the 17 miles of the levee, and I've got some illustrations and some aerial photos that I think will also help with the slope stability questions on exactly how the landfill and the levee relate to each other. One could certainly make an argument that the strongest part of the levee is where the landfill is because of the fact that we have a gazillion yards of material basically 50 to 70 feet above the river bottom. But for the core issue and why that has been a hot topic in Santa Maria is on the heels of Katrina and the other flooding issues, the Corps of Engineers and FEMA went back out and said, essentially, where are we susceptible to other big incidents like this? And so the Corps made a conscious effort to look at levee systems, and they chose not to certify the Santa Maria levee system, which then, for a 100-year event, which then triggered the people that would be impacted by a flooding event to get flood insurance either through FEMA or on their own. And so FEMA is in the process of developing a map. And I have an illustration that's quite small, we might put it up on the Elmo, that shows what the impact would be if the levee would fail during a 100-year storm event or a 100-year event in terms of the city of Santa Maria and which houses would basically get their feet wet in an event like that. Those residences will be required to obtain flood insurance, either on their own or through FEMA. And so that's where the cost implications come from the people that live there. Santa Barbara County Flood Control is intimately involved in the process of, it is their levee system. The Corps of Engineers built the levee system in late 50s, early 60s, and reading a little bit of history on it, it was really didn't work essentially 2 years after they completed it during some 1969 rain events. I don't know, Mr. Young, if you were in Santa Barbara at that time, but
no.
There was some flooding issues in 69 or some levee issues, and so they have been working ever since that time, they, the Corps and the Flood Control District, to beef up the levee in different portions. Right now, that has been exacerbated, at least the concern level, with the recent Zaca fire having probably impacted about 25% of the upstream watershed, and so there's been a very concerted effort for this wet season. But the levee and the certification issue, that's kind of how that is tied together.
So the Army Corps relates to FEMA.
Correct.
And that process.
Correct.
And the insurance.
Nothing to do with a landfill per se.
Right. No, that I understand. This is kind of a facetious comment, but does the Army Corps really take a really hard look at things like this and come up with good recommendations? I noticed from the staff report that they're going to come out with a report about what sections of the levee need to be addressed.
In terms of the, and really it's the core, but the flood control is pushing the core along to help because of a project of this nature is going to require some federal funding. So you bring the Corps along with you if you want to try to get some federal dollars into a bigger project that will armor and reinforce the levee system.
Okay.
And that's the long-term solution, so that then the Corps can recertify the levee, and then the folks that would potentially be impacted can drop their requirement to have flood insurance.
And there has to be the 100-year floodplain protection because of California regulations, separate and apart from the Army Corps and FEMA.